Wings of Otaku DX documentary.
Oh.
No? No, all right, anyway. We'll get to that later. Hello and welcome once again to another episode of the Otaku DX show, which is even more official now because the name of the website has been changed to Otaku DX. Update your likes and your bookmarks and your feeds. Anyway, I am Andrew, sometimes known as Veef. I am dying, but the show must go on, so I'm here.
He has been persevering. We were supposed to record 2 days ago, but he was feeling sick, and so we're going to wait until he felt better, and he's still sick.
I feel better, though.
But you're still sick. Point being. Anyway, speaking of which, I am Michael, never known as Deef. And we are...
Well, you are here.
Well, here, yeah.
When you are among friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to do the usual shtick. This is what, episode 4?
I think so.
Yeah. Not counting the episode 0.
Yeah.
Because nobody ever counts prequels.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do our usual, what we've got, what we've been watching, what we've been playing. Not necessarily in that order. We'll start off with, what did you get? You can go first, because I think I have the big one.
Okay. I'll try not to linger too long on all of these.
Because you're going to be reviewing them for all the various aspects of
I don't want to talk about my review list right now. It's big. Let's go in the order I got these things, I guess. First thing I got over our month-long hiatus, essentially, is I finally tracked down a first edition Voyager Prime from the Transformers Prime line.
A Prime.
Yes, which I hate saying so much. But this is a super cool toy. I can understand why this toy was so desirable when it was only available through, like, Japan and Canada.
Or inside that... Was that the one that came in the SDCC Matrix container?
No, that's actually... That pack contained the two-figure... Or the Optimus Prime that comes in the, like, Battles 2-pack. It's a smaller version of the same toy, essentially. It's a deluxe-sized one. Transforms very similarly, but this one's a bit more better because it looks less dumb. But no, it's one of those figures that's has a really nice stance. It has built-in ankle tilts, and so he supports almost any stance he has. And what I love about this toy, and just the Prime design in general, is the fact that he's like 500% chest mass, and it really makes him stand out. It really gives him a very impressive silhouette. Compared to other Primes, which are just kind of blocky-looking in comparison at times. It's like,
So does he have that proper Prime hourglass figure?
Yes, exactly. He's got them curves. Okay.
Them curves.
Yeah. But, very cool toy. I need to take pictures of it, because this is a very damn photogenic toy. But, yeah, that's one thing I got. The other thing is I got a box courtesy of Tamashii Nations... Or Bluefin specifically, and they sent me some Bugmans and things of the sort. For starters, they sent some SIC Kiwami Tamashii's. I got Kamen Rider Decade and Kamen Rider Rising Ultimate Kuga.
And for those of you who don't know, the SIC Kiwamis are smaller than the regular ones.
They're essentially 4-inch scale, so they look right at home with, like, G.I. Joe figures and Marvel figures that Hasbro makes. It's a very, very convenient crossover for these, if you're into that sort of thing. Decade, these figures, like, Decade is very nice. One thing I find really funny about him is the fact that his backside is super bulky because the original SIC design for, like, the full-sized SIC that's, like, 8 inches tall, it had, like, a ridiculously bulky torso section, and they managed to shrink that down for the Kiwami Tamashii on at least his front half, but his back looks ridiculous, and it actually gets in the way of his arm movement, so he can't move his arms backwards. But, he's pretty good. His weapon is the Ride Booker, which is a book he holds all of his card-based attacks in. And it actually...
Sometimes it's a gun, and sometimes it's a sword.
Yeah, and They actually made it such that you can turn the gun into all three of those components. The thing is, these parts are so freaking small that it doesn't work very well. Like, the gun will just kind of flop to pieces, or the sword, you know, will kind of wiggle in his hands. He also does the thing of coming with a stand, much like Mighty Kuga did, which is great, because it really helps add to this idea I've had of this line getting, it having its own place as, like, miniature display pieces, which I really love the idea of, but unfortunately that seems to be going away, which I'll touch on in a second. So he comes with a stand, he also comes with an alternate head, where it's the evil version of Decade. I took a crap ton of pictures with this guy, and review should be up actually by the end of this week or so.
Alright, so look forward to that.
And the other one is Rising Ultimate Kuga, like I said. This guy is freaking awesome. He's golden, super spiky, all asymmetrical with cracks and jagged edges all over his body. And he's fantastic. His paint work is really well done. The sculpting detail is fantastic. What's interesting about this guy is he's, for the most part, the SIC Kiwami Tamashi line is a line of figures that Bandai's done before and then just shrinking it down. Rising Ultimate is only available in the Kiwami Tamashi scale. They've never done this figure at the larger 8-inch scale. And so this actually made this a very desirable figure, such that pre-order sold out in a lot of places for this guy, which does not happen for this line very often.
No, because most people have what they want in the size already, the larger size.
That's the unfortunate thing about this line, is that it fills a niche where people who may want a smaller scaled figure, but the thing is, these figures are already available in that scale, or in that larger scale. These are technically figures that everyone has already. It's kind of like the equivalent of, if you remember a while ago, Revolt or Kyoto did those miniature Revoltech Evas.
I was actually going to go a little farther back and say when Bandai was doing the HCM Pro line, and it started off as like mostly retreads of whatever things they had out in Mobile Suit and Action, and then Robot Damashi came around and
steamrolled right over it.
Yeah, more or less.
So yeah, this guy's fantastic. He doesn't come with a lot. He just comes with some alternate hands and an alternate head where he has black eyes instead of red eyes for when he's, like, possessed by the darkness or something. Only problem with this guy, and I really thought it was a major downfall, is the fact that he does not come with a stand like the previous two figures in this line have. Which makes me really concerned about whether this is going to be a consistent or it's going to be a cherry-picking thing. Because that would really bring it down, I think.
I think at this point they figure most people have lots and lots of stands.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because the extra thought was very nice.
I think the only company that consistently does stands is Kyoto.
Kyoto and Good Smile, they do it with all their Figmas do come with stands.
Yeah, that is true. And Figma stands are often more useful than the stands that come with Bandai products.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get to that.
Pre-cure stands suck. That is all. But anyway, that's what I got as far as Kiwami Tamashi goes. The other thing in there was the SH Figuarts Scorpion Zodiark from Kamen Rider 4s. Now, have you seen this figure before, Andrew?
I've seen the design for the Scorpio Zodiark.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to say, like, I've had a chance to handle a lot of Figuarts over time, including a web exclusive or two. This figure is the most gorgeous SH figure art I think I've ever seen. Like, it is just, it comes by virtue of the design itself, which is a super intricate covered with lots of silver lines and pretty gems and things. But they did a fantastic job of transferring all of that over. Every single bit of detail is sculpted. All the gems on his front side are clear pieces of plastic. And articulation really is not that impeded. His ab crunch or torso joint is kind of limited because of the sculpt. But the thing is, he has a scorpion on his head.
Yes.
Every single one of those little legs moves. on the head. It's just a peg, but they move. It's ridiculous.
That's a little excessive. I mean, I don't remember watching it in the show and having the legs.
It never moved. Yeah. But it's going to be great for like surprise reaction shots and all the hands shoot up. That's what I plan on doing at least. He also comes with the Zodiard, because this is one of the satellite Zodiards, who are like the main bad ones. They all wear these really badass looking black robes, and you have the option to display the Zodiard with the robe on. This robe is dumb and does not work. It is like,
it has to be something. They have to fail somehow.
Yeah, they can't get everything right. That's how it always goes. But basically, it's just two giant hollow pieces of what I feel is like the equivalent of kind of thick gunpla plastic that you just, it's just a shell. It just fits over the thing and over their arms. It's one piece for the whole body and then two sleeves for the arms. And it limits the articulation, does not look that good or convincing because they didn't do much sculpting as far as making it look like fabric. And I think it's a waste of time because if you do display it like that, you're hiding all the gorgeous detail on this thing. So yeah, that part stays in the box where it belongs.
Does that cloak at least like touch the floor, so now it's a de facto display stand, so it'll never go anywhere?
Not really. The thing is, the feet, he has a very large footprint for a fig art. So, yeah. I mean, he's pretty sturdy. Unfortunately, the feet aren't metal, but they're also the good foot joint that, like, Shadow Moon has. So there's that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, this thing. Oh, it's a good joint. I like this joint a lot.
Well, Shadow Moon also has those little insect legs on the back, so you can plop those down if you feel like it's a
that's
bit
true,
more
that's
of a
true.
Better stance.
Mm-hmm. And the last thing I got as of recent is a box that actually just got here yesterday. And so I've been very preoccupied not doing homework by playing with these instead. It was a box containing all the Figmas I've pre-ordered over the last 6 months.
Thank you, good smile.
Oh, you're telling me. How about we go in order in which they were supposed to come out, because that'd be funny.
Okay, that sounds good.
Now, the one that I've been waiting on the longest was Tekkaman Blade. And initially I was kind of worried based on like actual pictures and what some people have said on Twitter and whatnot. Well, for starters, this really has been a journey because this guy was he was up for pre-orders in March of this year.
Last year.
It was 2013, isn't it? And it was supposed to come out in June or July along with SIC Kiwami Tamashii Kuga. I was going to get both of them in the same box. That was the original plan. Then it got pushed back to July, then August, then all the way to October, and then to December, late December, mind you. And then as the beginning of the end of November happened, they were suddenly caught up, and so even though it was originally slated, finally, for late December, they pushed it all the way to early December. Which I don't think that's ever happened before, where Figma gets pushed back up its release date. But anyway, initial pictures made the sculpt look kind of gummy, and especially in the head where it looked like it was almost misshapen at certain angles. And some people were saying how he didn't have an ankle joint, and at the same time he's also actually not in scale with other Figmas. He's a little bit too small for that. He's, I'd say, closer to maybe 5.5-inch or 5-inch scale instead. So I was prepared to expect not too much from this guy. But after actually getting it in hand, I really like this toy. Some complaints people had were with the shoulders, which are on a double Figma joint assembly, such that you have to reposition his shoulder pads along with his shoulders. And it's a little awkward, but it's nothing you can't finagle or use effectively. It doesn't actually get in the way, like some people said it does. The Volteca gimmick, it's cool, but I actually barely use it now that I actually have it. It looks a little small, and it ends up actually leaving the shoulder joints hollow because of the Figma joint assembly. And I actually don't use it. It's actually kind of frustrating because it occurs to me this shoulder joint is the reason this toy's probably been held back for 6 months.
But yeah, that has always been a sticking point with a lot of different Tekkaman Blade figures.
Mm-hmm. makes it.
I think he does benefit from being an all plastic figure.
That's very true.
Because the only two other recent Tekkoman Blade figures that came out were the tiny pack-in for the Soul Spec Pegas, and the Armor Plus Tekkoman Blade, who is an Armor Plus figure for really no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, it's not like Tekkoman Blade is an armor design to begin with, really. But,
The armor does get summoned around him, but then as soon as the scene changes, he seems to have different proportions than a human being does, or even an anime human being.
Indeed. So,
it's kind of like how they insisted on making a Vicon Fu figure for Machine Robo and give it that docking
gimmick.
Which isn't in the it's not really in the show. They just teleport inside each other.
It's just implied, I guess.
Well, that's how the original toy was, because it was a re-mold of Gordion.
No, it's pretty fantastic. Some people were saying he didn't have an ankle joint, but after roughhousing this toy enough, I got the foot joints loose such that he does have a pretty good ankle joint, and also for no apparent reason, his heel joint is on a hinge. It does nothing.
Okay.
But
doesn't help you pose him or anything like that?
It helps when he's doing those air dashing poses to make his lower legs a bit more streamlined, but the thing is, it's so subtle it doesn't really amount to anything.
Yeah.
But other than that, he's a pretty fantastic figure. I think he's great. I may end up getting Evil later on, because it seems pre-orders for Evil didn't sell out nearly as fast as Tekkoman did. And I know it's been a couple months, but I really do hope we get a Blaster or something, because I really don't want to get the web-exclusive Tekkoman Blaster.
Yeah, nobody does. I think it's way too overpriced.
It's my favorite design from Tekkoman. It's infuriating, I tell you.
But that's the one when Blade is dying even more so than he normally is.
Exactly. It's the most memorable scene.
Okay.
Yeah.
They recycle 10 times.
All the time. It is the exact same scene if you ever play the Super Robot Wars games. It's hilarious how spot on they got those cutscenes. Down to D-Boy screaming and then the transitioning back and forth between his face and the helmet.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good stuff.
It is. That's technology.
Okay, next Figma that was supposed to come out was Silver Crow from XL World. And this figure... this figure got into some interesting... It got into one of those Japanese company wars that happen every so often, like that happened with the Jian Yudao and Revoltech versions of the YF-19 and the 21, where...
I feel like we're quite as concurrent. I think it's just that the GNU Doe, it stuck around a little longer.
And it happened with something else recently as well. Well, the thing is, that would have happened a lot more if this figure came out on time.
Yeah.
But, I've gotten to handle both the SH Figure and the Figma now, and I have to say, if you want a solid action figure, the SH Figure is probably better. If you want a more screen-accurate version of Silver Crow, this is the way to go, because he is so freaking skinny and lanky looking, it's ridiculous. 60% of his body is legs. He's almost all legs.
That's the magic of Figma.
His left leg likes popping off a lot.
That's also the magic of Figma.
It's kind of agitating. Tekkoman Blade suffers the same problem, but not nearly as much. It's part of because he has the same sort of rubber body that Telos does, where it hides the leg joint.
Oh.
And so it kind of gets in the way. You can't really move the leg in certain directions.
Alright.
But it's also at the same time alright, because he's mostly in flying positions with his wings, which are freaking huge and a huge space hog, such that I had to rearrange my room.
Yeah, winged fingers are always hard if you want to try to pack everything on the shelf.
Yeah, they're like the Gerwalk form of normal figures. But,
good analogy.
He comes with some effect parts for him, stabbing stuff, which look really cool, and they have completely superfluous additional parts to make it look like his sides are coming out. It's like a spear air effect thing, and there are two more to make it look like these turbines are shooting out air. They're so tiny and don't stay on, so I just leave them in the box. But he's all right by himself, but I think if I didn't get the next figure, I would not have bothered with it, which is Black Lotus. And I really like this figure. It's one of the few figures that, or few Figma specifically, that have a waist joint, and it's a really good waist joint.
Well, I guess most of them just have like a chest joint.
Well, the thing is, they do have a waist joint technically, just by the, because it's like a wishbone shaped joint assembly for the legs, where it's one ball joint and then it goes stems off in a Y where the other two ball joints for the legs are.
Yeah.
And so they all have it, but the thing is they can't really utilize it. Whereas this is a full-on ball-jointed waist.
Oh, okay.
In her normal form, she is super freaking pointy. Because she is made of stabby points. I know, the enthusiast reviewed the Izanagi Diard and was saying how I hate floating figures and they need to stop making them. I don't feel that way at all about this figure. I think it's fantastic. I think coming with a stand that works probably helps.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the biggest problem with the Persona figure he did is that stand it came with is just made for making it float in a static position.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's about it.
Yeah.
But she's actually made of a different plastic material that's more matte than the usual Figma material, makes her slightly more dense at the hand, and also makes her very just fun to pick up, sort of. Like, it's a very enjoyable figure just to move the joints on and whatnot. And I didn't realize this about the figure, so I was confused by the second tray on it, but one of her gimmicks is that she can go into a battle mode, and usually what I saw that as is, oh, she has bigger swords on her arms now. They give you parts for all of her limbs. It changes out her lower legs, her arms, her skirt piece as well, and her head. This makes her even pointier than before. And her head is made of such thin, clear plastic, I'm terrified of snapping it. And, like, if I were not so terrified of breaking this figure, this would be my favorite for sure. And it's weird because I think a lot of people did not get this figure, actually. I only know one other guy personally who owns it, and he's in Australia. But right now I have Black Lotus being carried by Silver Crow in the air. And that's kind of like one of the quintessential poses to have these two in. And in that pose together, they look pretty fantastic. It's definitely, if you have to pick one, go with Black Lotus. But you should need both. You should get both. That's what I think. Yeah. And you want to say something?
No, I was going to say, speaking of swords.
Mm-hmm. The last Figma I got, which actually, along with Techman Blade, also got pushed up early, which I found amusing, is Kazunari Tsubasa from Symphogear, my favorite character of the show. This is a blue chick who sings and is surrounded by swords. There is nothing I don't love about this. Her ridiculously large, like, high-heeled shoes make her super stable, and her legs are also slightly limited by her dress skirt thing of her suit design. And she comes with a lot of accessories. I took a picture, I don't think it got uploaded to Twitter, of her wielding both of her swords and having both of her stupid foot sword things deployed at the same time. And it's pretty badass, I'm not gonna lie. Unfortunately, she does not come with the swan song bleeding face that has become so famous, which I think is a awful omission, because the Nendoroid does come with it. Like,
that's Tsubasa supposed to be released the end of this month.
Oh, man. But she comes with a smiling face, and I really would have preferred that swapped out for the bleeding face instead.
She doesn't do a lot of smiling when she's all in Symphogear mode anyway.
Exactly, that's why I'm not okay with it. I'm not going to use that face. She has calm face, anger face, and bleeding face. That's what it should be. But swapping out her lower feet blade is surprisingly easy. It's just the peg, and you just swap it out. They're ball jointed, so you can have them going in any whatso direction you want. I haven't done any breakdancing poses with them yet, but I'm gonna get to that eventually. Probably some review pictures.
Now, if you were a crazy person like Daniel on Twitter, you would probably own the Car Robots Fortress Maximus sword. Or, sorry, Brave Maximus. No. Is that Brave Maximus?
I think it's Brave Maximus is the one that had...
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm not crazy.
But that sword is the perfect color to be her giant sword that she summons in that one episode.
Yeah. It's a shame because I really wish they included, like, a papercraft version of that sword. Because, honestly, having a realistic, like, an actual plastic version of that thing is absolutely ludicrous. But it's such,
well,
like,
just
it feels like...
If you look around, you know, some, like, costume stores and some cheap toy stores, you could probably find something that looks like that.
Yeah,
like a kid's role-playing sword.
Because it's a pretty big sword. She basically becomes, like, the guard on it, and that's about it. But, aside from that omission, this is a pretty good Figma. Her hair gets in the way of her arms a lot because it's just one solid molded piece, which is weird because I haven't seen Figmas do that in a while.
Delos doesn't do that. She has, like, two tufts.
Yeah, that's what I'm used to because that's what they did for long-haired characters for the longest time. But, oh, I guess she didn't get that. Her little ponytail, though, is on, like, a pivot joint so you can have it move, which I find incredibly entertaining.
That's silly.
She also comes with a little knife and a little black piece of cardboard for you to stab into the Figma stand, such that it looks like she just stabbed your shadow and you're stuck in place.
Oh.
Which is a nice touch.
That's interesting. Alright.
Yes.
So I guess I'm up, right?
Yes, sir. That is all I got.
Alright. So I will cover the two things that Yeah, I covered everything on Collection DX, almost, except for one thing, which I'm still working on. All right, so the two things, or technically three things I got from Time Machine Nations. So the first is the Super Robot Shogokin Armored Core 5 UCR 10-A, which is a terrible name.
That's a fantastic name. What are you talking about?
It's a parts number. It's literally a parts
number. More things need to have those names.
It's literally the parts number for its core. So I was kind of expecting there to be more controversy in the comments due to the fact that this guy seems a little out of place in the Super Robot Shogokin line, barring arguments about what is a super robot and what is a real robot. This very clunky, well, to put it frankly, video gamey design doesn't really kind of fit the aesthetic, even with characters like Altaisen and Vice Ritter, who are both from a video game, but are a bit more...
anime.
Yeah, they're very anime. This character is essentially the starting robot, although that's not quite accurate, because you get one of each kind of part when you start playing Armored Core 5. Sadly, he is not really modular. You couldn't really get his head off or get his waist to separate from his legs. You could pop his arms off, which I think doing so left a crack in one of the arm sockets.
Oh.
Even though you're supposed to do... It didn't hurt anything, but I was like, wow, that doesn't look like it's supposed to be there.
That's just kind of poor form.
Yeah. Also, he is covered in many tiny little antenna, which are made out of hard plastic. It feels a bit more model-like in its details and in some of the plastic they use. There's a fair bit of metal on the thing, especially in the legs and in the arm joints. He doesn't feel quite as heavy as like Altaisen or Weiss Ritter, though. It looks okay. I mean, it looks like the character from the video game. The biggest omissions that I see is that... Well, first talking about the weapons, he only comes with four. And with the way the weapons are designed... Each one has its own hand, but you only get four hands for the four weapons. You can't swap weapons between sides.
Oh, really?
No, you can't, because each hand is only for one weapon. You can't really mix and match the weapons because only two of them actually mount on his shoulder brackets. The shoulder brackets do not actually move like they do in the game. Because in the game, when you change weapons, your robot will reach up, put its weapon on one rack, on one of the little prongs on the rack, and the whole thing just kind of rotates around like a carousel. It puts the weapon in the hand, and then it just kind of grabs it, and now you got your new weapon. So this is something that happens a lot in the game, and the toy cannot really do it, which is kind of weird, because that's like an action feature and not a really hard one to do. It's like, it just rotates, guys. You can sort of fake it because one of the prongs is facing upward and one of the prongs is facing backwards on the shoulder brackets, the shoulder mounts. So you can just kind of put the weapon in the forward-facing prongs and then kind of try to make it look like it's reaching up to get the weapon. But again, you can't put all the weapons on the mounts, so you can only have certain ones in the back. So it's like, oh, I can't really like do what I do in the game. Another thing also is that the shoulder doesn't open up to show the sub-weapon area. Because all of the shoulders, they all have a way of like equipping, you know, like rocket launchers or a gun or something. When you use it, your shoulder will open up and somehow, oh, now this guy, the way his shoulder works is the one with the big blocky, they kind of look like missile launchers themselves. Basically, the top part rises up, and then you can see like little like missile launchery things in the inside. Other ones, it's just like, oh, it kind of, like, part of the shoulder just slides away, and then there's a little slot in there that stuff comes out of. So there's no, like, pop-up part. There's no swap-in part to do this. So it's kind of, it's just annoying that it doesn't do the things that you can actually play around with in the game. So on the assembly screen, you can push select, and you can just kind of look at your robot. You can make it walk or dash or branch its guns or switch its guns. Or make the little thing open up. So it's like, somehow the video game has more playability than the toy.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. And the other thing that I got with it to review, I decided to put these in the same review, which was the grind blade accessory, which comes in its own box. This was a Time Machine Web exclusive. They brought it over here as a regular release. It's as big as the robot itself. It's that infamous six-bladed flaming chainsaw as seen in all of the promotional material. There's a dude who threatens you with it in the game several times. And unfortunately, it's about as useful as the thing actually is in the game. Because all of those ultimate weapons, or as they call them in Japan, overrid weapons, it basically, when you mount it, you can't use any back weapons. And you just kind of clip it onto the back of the SRC. It comes with a stand. Actually, it has two display arms for one stand base, which is a little flat plate. They just put different arms on. One is just like this straight display arm with a little swivel joint at the end. You can just stick it into the bottom of the blade to keep it upright when the whole thing is at rest. The other one is like a bit more like a Gundam stand, where it sort of goes up and then it tilts to the side, and then it has an additional...
Yeah, has that angle.
Yeah, has a little additional swivel at the end of it. And that's for when you have the blade out, deployed. Now, the way this thing is supposed to work, when it's activated, is your robot pops one of its own arms off. You don't get that back. This claw comes around and then grabs the robot's stump, where the shoulder, where the arm was. This claw doesn't really hook into anything. You just sort of position it over the stump area. I mean, you can, you know, get it so that each of the claws rest on the stump, but again, it doesn't hook in, so you just kind of have to leave it there. The whole claw assembly is pretty detailed, and, you know, it actually, all the little claw parts of the claw move, but it's like, okay, this is kind of not really working. Like, you should have had, like, a ball on the end of it to plug into the stump. You know, it wouldn't look quite as authentic, but it would still, like, stay there. The main arm for displaying the grind blade while it's in use doesn't really work. It doesn't have enough joints. It doesn't have enough flexibility. And I tried to, like, look at other people's reviews to see how they position it. to do like action poses where it's forward. The whole assembly is forward. I'm pretty sure they just left it unattached to the back. I also noticed that a couple of different reviewers, instead of using the included display stand, which, again, doesn't have enough flexibility to actually put the thing in a cool pose, they started using Figma stands or Tamashii stands, because, again, they're compatible with the same spot. Also, Revoltech stands work in there, too.
Mm-hmm. Also, as a quick additional note, those pegs also fit G.I. Joe and Marvel figures. It's the same size peg.
That's
so
handy.
So you can use those stands for that, too.
That is handy. So the grind blade is only really good if you want to leave it on display. Or find, like, the one good pose you can use it in. I tried looking at the instructions to find out how to pose it. I think all they show you that you can do with it is just have it out to the side. Like, it's charging up and is about to be used.
Oh, that's useful.
Yeah, it doesn't actually have any, like, flaming effect parts either, so you can't really get that whole image of giant flaming chainsaw. But in the game, nobody uses these things because they're flipping useless. So it's like, they were really just there to be a tech demo. And I think that kind of encapsulates the design. It's a tech demo, you know?
Hmm.
Robots in video games, they have to look really slick and have lots of details just to push the specs of the system to make you want to buy the system. That's how it's always with Armored Core games, but, you know, didn't really affect the gameplay that much in the PS2 era. Yeah, I'm kind of getting a little disappointed with Armored Core 5 itself anyway. I need to get another copy of 4 Answer and play it. Replay it.
I can't remember, is it 5 the one that everyone hates? Or because I know someone, like, there's one that everyone really doesn't like.
Armored Core 2 for the PS2 is pretty bad.
It might have been that.
5, people are really lukewarm to it. With the whole emphasis on the online play. The missions are all pretty simple because of that, and there's not a lot to do even with the online play. And you got to have a team of at least like 10 guys willing to play at any given time to really get online play.
That's kind of limiting.
Well, I mean, actually, you can launch with a team of like 3 people because you could. Now they added bots. You could have.
Well, at least there's that.
Yeah,
then.
You have bots, but one person still has to be the operator. Which means you stare at a map screen and direct your friends around.
So exciting.
Yeah, it's like the little brother position. It's like, you get to be the operator. Oh, yay! Yeah. I also got, this one caught the attention of some of my fellow reviewers, D-Yard's Terry Bogard.
Okay.
Are you okay?
All
right.
Go on.
All right. Is D-Yard's Terry okay? Not really. He's thoroughly mediocre. Ignoring for the second that his screaming face looks terrible. And even the neutral face doesn't look too good. They both suffer from the same problem as that. If you look on the box, the face sculpt had a bit more depth to it. But on the final production toy, his eyes just don't really sit in his face, like right in eye sockets. They're just sort of like tampographed on there without any feeling of like depth to them.
They end up looking flat. Is
yeah,
what they, do.
They look very flat. With in combination with the yelling face, you suddenly have this very small mouth and these weird flat eyes, which aren't really that well applied, so they're kind of derpy. So he just kind of looks a little terrible. Again, ignoring all that. He doesn't really pose that well for such a simple figure. There's a little bit of limitations in his arms because of the sculpt of the muscles on his arms. His ab crunch doesn't work at all, which is kind of like, why wouldn't this work? He has to crouch a lot. That's his signature move. He does have the typical, like, pull-down style figure arts hip joints, where you can pull one half down and the rest of the leg is on a ball joint. It looks really scary thin. I don't like how it didn't break at any point. It didn't look like it was going to break, but it's just kind of weird. I did put him on ice for a little bit to make sure he would still move.
Oh, wow.
I kind of do that with a lot of toys now, anyway. His ankles don't work. Like,
yeah, that's one of the main complaints I've heard about him.
Because essentially he has a little pull-down ankle and he still has ankle tilts. But the weird thing, though, is that if you pull down on his one ankle, didn't want to actually pull down on mine, and I pulled the foot out of the socket. I mean, it's not broken, it just pulled out of the socket. So he actually has, besides his sneaker, there's the joint, and then there's like more sneaker in his leg, which is kind of weird, because I thought they would just like put, you know, sock in there. Apparently Terry wears high tops.
Yeah, it looks a bit off if you take it off.
But still, the problem is you can't actually make his foot go forward enough so that's at a level position, which means he's always going to want to topple backwards because he's always kind of leaning a little bit backwards on his ankles. So many times during the photo shoot, he did topple over backwards.
That's unfortunately not very surprising.
Yeah. I mean, he's just kind of... Oh, yeah, also another really annoying thing. Some of those alternate heads aren't really shaped right. Like, the peg, or the hole that goes into the ball joint on his neck, which is actually on a little double joint that goes into the main fleshy part of his neck, it's not shaped right, so it doesn't kind of snap in. Like, you can feel it on the normal head, it snaps in there. On the smiling and yelling head, it doesn't really snap in there. And there's the same problem with the ponytail attachment, because he has two ponytails, one at rest and one in action. So it's like, I would try to put the head on, then I would knock the ponytail off and put the ponytail back on, try to get the head on, and then it's just like this cycle of just stuff popping off constantly. Also, another problem is that you do not get a normal unhatted head. If that's a word.
Nope.
No, instead what happens is you have three heads, all which end in a big peg, like we are all Devo. And you swap the hat between each head. So if you want to do his iconic win pose where he just takes his hat off and throws it out on his opponent, you have to keep his head off camera. I don't even know why they did that, because one of my friends informed me that the SH Figure Arts Monkey D. Luffy has two complete heads, just with one head where the hair is a bit flatter so you can put a hat on it. Like, they don't even give you, you know, a hair cap, which would look pretty bad because there's a big seam where that would connect.
Yeah, but still, yeah, it would be something.
It would be something. So, I don't know what's going to happen with the D. Arts King of Fighters figures, because if their first one, the flagship character for the series, is kind of crappy, it's not looking too good.
Yeah, this figure has it's made a lot of people go sour on the D. Arts line. Like, between this, the recent Persona, a couple of the Persona D. Arts, and also the fact that apparently D. Arts Rockman is just kind of forgettable, a lot of people are really starting to hate this line, which I think is really unfortunate.
Well, isn't a problem with Rockman is that he's such a simple character anyway?
Yeah, and everyone's just like, this isn't very exciting. The thing people like the most about that toy are the Metool and Rush.
That is a cute Rush, though.
The thing is, people have been taking the Metool cap and putting it on other toys.
Of course.
And it makes everything automatically better.
Yes, I love the Metool head. Terry comes with some accessories. I mean, the effect parts they look nice. I was thinking about keeping the figure just for the parts, but it's like, yeah, it's not worth it. My only complaint with the effect parts is that the power geyser is a little bit small, but at the same time, it's huge. Huge solid piece of clear plastic.
Yeah.
And it has to fit in that box. And Terry also comes with a butt plug.
It's been a while since we've had one of those.
It's like, well, we need a stand attachment, and we really don't want to have, you know, invisible clips around his waist, so butt plug.
You know what? At least he has something, unlike all SH figure arts, for some reason still.
Well, they can't ruin their perfect posteriors.
Yeah, but, like, Ultra Acts have figured it out. SIC Kiwami Tamashii's have figured it out. D-Arts are doing it. It's every single line except for Fig Arts can, you know, find a place to put a hole somewhere and make it relatively inconspicuous.
Yeah. Revoltex are usually pretty good about that, even though they still look hilarious when you do use the stand. So my last two items are both Macross items. One is on the website, one isn't. Let's start with the one that was the most underwhelming. So I got my armor parts for my VF-171 EX. Out of all of these Tom Schweb exclusive accessory packs for their DX Trigogan Valkyries, this is the one that most feels like it just needed to come with the toy. You know, putting aside the fact that Alto's VF-171 is not seen without armor in its, like, two episodes of existence, the box is pretty small. It looks about the same dimensions as the main toys box. It's all on a single tray, and it doesn't actually come with any, like, new stand adapter parts, which it sort of doesn't need, but it sort of actually does need them. But there's also a problem is that the stand adapter for the regular toy was pretty poorly thought out anyway. So these are just, you know, armor parts. They just let you dress up your giant robot. They kind of beef it up appropriately. For the most part, they do work pretty well. I was a little bit concerned about some of the clips that go onto the arm armor, where you have the gun that everybody I know really wants.
For some reason.
It's a cool-looking gun. It's pretty... It is, like, super Cal Mori-y. And,
yeah. It's just... It was really funny to watch the internet just going nuts over that gun. It's like, oh, I need that gun.
Yeah, I just need the gun. It's like, you want a recast or something? But, yeah, the gun's on a little arm. It can pivot out. Doesn't shoot anything or anything like that. It just looks cool. The one problem, though, is that on the other arm, you have the missile launcher. And I had to check in the anime because I knew it shot missiles, but I didn't know how it shot missiles. So I was like, what does the... Do panels open up on, like, the top part and, like, little tiny missiles shoot out? It's like, no, actually, the ends open up and missiles come out of either side.
Oh.
So the toy does not do this.
Oh.
There's not even, like, the doors don't open. There's not even, like, plug-in open doors.
Is it just a solid chunk and that's it?
It's a solid chunk of plastic.
Oh, man.
Which means that the only real gimmick on this thing are the tiny little landing gear inside the leg armor that come out because you can't use the main landing gear with the armor on.
Wow, that's...
For completeness sake, it's good. On its own, they're kind of not really worth it. And I've seen some people ask if they should, like, bite the bullet on these so they can get them for the upcoming mass production colors. You can't really do that for one reason, is that the normal toy does not have hard points on its wings.
Really?
No.
Oh, wow.
So they decided to do what they did on the VF High Metal VF1 toy, where you have separate wings that have hard points on them. This was a part that drove many collectors crazy, because the way they attach is you have one small white pin that it moves around on, and then this larger pin that's basically in the middle of the big like little track that it moves around on, and those pins would pop out constantly, at least on other people's toys. Mine, they seem to stay attached pretty well. The thing is, though, is that the wings that do have the hard points... The hard points aren't really that conspicuous because it's, you know, white on white.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me wonder why they even really bothered with that other than to fill out the need to have a whole new set of parts. So this thing does, in fact, come with a new set of wings, which are only going to look good on the appropriate Valkyrie, which is kind of pissy. I think it's really funny, though, that because in the anime they did reuse stuff from Macross Zero. So now this Frontier Valkyrie has all these Macross Zero armaments that weren't made by Yamato. Although one set of missiles is the same between the two. It's kind of funny. The missiles that have those little orange gems on the front of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just that on the Frontier one, they are gray. On the Zero one, they are white. They look almost the same as far as sculpting goes, but they're not quite the same. The Mounting points are also very similar, but again, one peg is bigger, so don't stick things where they don't belong. Please. I do like how it does come with the multi-missile launcher from Macross Zero that we never saw in a toy, or even a model kit, which is weird. The little hexagon-shaped one. And it also comes with a futuristic AMRAAM, like, you know, the ones we use now, except it's gray. It's dark gray. I just think it's really funny. It's like, we need another missile for those VF-171 models. Well, take some missiles from the F-14s we modeled up and change their color. And now they're space missiles.
Space missiles.
Yeah. Also, you cannot mount it on its display stand in Batarang mode with the missiles on.
Wow, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, because the missiles kind of bunch up against the shoulders. And I mean, there is enough space to have it standing or posing slightly with the missiles on the wings. So, but you can't put it on the stand because the stand requires the wings to be out a little bit, which is also really stupid. Mm. Yeah, that thing wasn't very well designed.
That's unfortunate, it really is.
Alright, so we're running a little long on just the what we've got segment, so I guess maybe we'll roll the other thing into the next segment. Okay, but I'm going to finish this off right with the big thing. A really big thing.
The important one.
The important thing. Or I might have made a silly noise when I got it. I'm not going to repeat.
And it was completely warranted.
And it was completely warranted. I got my Yamatsu VF-4G Lightning III. And I was also the first person to put up a video review in English, you know, because you can't count the instructional video by Mr. K of Yamato. I think I was the first text review of it, because I stayed up all night finishing that text review.
Yeah, that was up stupid fast.
I was telling myself, it's like, I'm going to wait until the morning. It's midnight. It's like past midnight slightly on New Year's Eve. I got to finish it. I have to finish this. And I finished it. It welcomed us to the new year with the Valkyrie that came out last year. Even in Macross, it came out last year. Ha ha.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Because as people know from reading the whole thing, is like the VF4 was originally from Flashback 2012, where it appears for like 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. But everyone was so enamored with it that they just wanted more of it. Until, kind of mediocre video game came out, and then, hey, Kawamura got a chance to say, you know what, this needs to be a full Transformer Valkyrie. Needs a Garwok mode. Needs a Batteroid mode. I'm going to do it. And he did.
Because he is insane.
No, I was going to say, in an interview with Shinichiro Watanabe, who co-directed Macross Plus, they asked him about Kawamura, and he's like, he's a weird guy. He's always playing with Legos. It's true.
That was way funnier than it should have been.
So what were you going to say?
I honestly can't remember. Let's just keep going.
Okay. So this toy is expensive. It is completely worth it, in my opinion. And it was easier to obtain than any of the Frontier Valkyries, despite being more expensive. Despite being made to order, it was still easier to obtain.
Damnedest thing.
Yeah, so I've heard they're very happy with the results as far as people buying it. People who didn't buy it are now like, oh, now I want it now. It's like, good luck with that. They're probably going to do another production run. I don't know if they're going to keep the same colors, if they're ever going to do the flashback colors, because this one is based off the video game coloring. They could do the goofy-looking solid red and solid blue ones from Macross M3, which should be...
I don't know what those look like, but I don't want to.
Oh, you can find out later.
Those colors don't sound good.
Yeah, they didn't look very good in-game either. For a design that has such a storied history, where it was only a fighter for a long time, and then had its Gearwalk and Batarang mode finished later... You know, the time between 1987 and 1995, the toy transforms surprisingly smoothly, with two caveats. Them missiles like to pop off.
Mm-hmm.
Them little panels underneath where that high help hide the legs in fighter mode like to pop off too. Now these are fixable things. You just thicken the pegs with whatever you thicken pegs with.
Your peg thickener material of choice.
I still don't understand why like Bandai hasn't just made a stuff that you use for toys that people can just purchase and have like the...
They just want you to buy more stands.
No, but be like for other things. Like they could have...
Yeah, they'd rather you buy more stands instead.
I don't need any stands. Speaking of which, the VF4 stands pretty damn well for what it looks like. It poses pretty well. A lot of metal in there. Surprising amount of metal. And it's very shiny, too. It's like, it kind of shimmers, actually, when you look at certain joints. It's like kind of like that look of polished metal. So it's very, very bright, shiny. Arms do not raise above those huge shoulder pauldrons, but you know what? There is totally a pair of joints in there that could have let them do that if they didn't have those giant shoulder pauldrons in the way. The transformation is surprisingly easy for all that's been made about it being a complex design. It is very straightforward. Everything feels right when you pop it in and out of place. It requires like almost no fiddling to get things to work, with the exception of trying to get the little locking peg between the groin and the nose cone. But yeah, It works out in the end. It's really weird how like the little fin underneath the fighter mode actually sinks into the nose cone, and it snaps in place. There's a little slit in there with tiny little clips that lock that little fin in place when you flip it forward. It's like it was kind of surreal getting.
Yeah.
I have to admit, it was a little like, wow, hey, Mr. VF4, you're totally here.
You finally have a toy.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. It's like, unless you count the tiny little gashapon of the fighter mode, which you don't. And now we're all just kind of wondering, where do we go next?
VF9.
They expressed interest in that.
I hope they do it, because that one, oof. I like that design a lot.
It's doable. Somebody scratch built his own Transformer model kit.
Mm-hmm. Like, that may break me on getting another Yamato if they do the VF9.
At the very least, that Valkyrie is small. Smaller than a VF1, mm-hmm. So it can't possibly come.
Is it smaller
than
a VF1?
It is smaller than
a VF1, really?
Yeah, it's a really small Valkyrie.
Oh, wow. I'd be okay with that, then.
So that might keep the cost down. But I'm thinking VF5000, because that one had the most screen time as far as like hero Valkyries that they haven't done yet. Or good guy Valkyries, not necessarily the heroes. They said maybe VF14. They would probably use the game version, not the Macross 7 version. So that would be kind of cool. I'll tell you what they're not going to be doing. Battle pods.
What was that? I thought you were going to say the one from Macross 2 that I never remember the name of. The VF2SS?
Yeah, they're not going to do that one.
Nope.
Your best bet is with Bandai. If they can make a toy line where it actually, you know, lasts long enough so they can make that thing. Because,
no.
they promised it the VF100s. It never came out. So, I don't know if they're going to promise new things in their transforming Valkyrie model kit line. I think it's going to be like VF1 and then nothing.
That line looks so forgettable. Or at least that design looks so forgettable.
Well, that was a prototype. And to be fair, we've had, you know, tons of VF1 toys. It's kind of like, you know, I think my love affair with the VF1 died years ago.
Me, it's more like it's happily married with the Yamato 160th. And it's like, I don't need any more VF1 toys.
It is kind of crazy when you look at their pictures from their showroom where they have a bunch of, basically all of their Yamato toy, or their, sorry, all of their Macross toys set up, and they have the one display with all of the VF1s they've done. There's like 30 of them in there.
It's ridiculous. Like, they milked that mold like you would not believe.
But to be fair, they didn't make anything up this time. They just did what was in the show and the movie.
That's true.
The only one you can say they made up was that goofy dark color VF1S. I didn't get that one. So
you have to draw the line somewhere.
So yeah, they're probably not going to do the enemy stuff. I heard the company that was going to be making the Destroid kits decided to, you know, do Space Battleship Yamato stuff for the new movie instead.
Yeah, that'd probably make more money.
I did not know that the new Space Battleship Yamato movie has a Blue Noah spaceship. Yeah.
Really?
Or the new movies, OVAs, whatever you want to call them. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, Blue Noah. What's up? Why are you here?
When's the last time you got attention?
So that's the living tribute to Nishizaki. Is it Blue Noah?
He sure did try.
He tried very hard, and then he fell off a boat and died. Anyway, so we're going to take a break right now. Get back with probably a little bit of news, what we've been watching, what we've been playing. So what we've got was a lot. We got a whole lot, and it was red hot. Pew.